Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Sarah D'Elia, in for Mike Collins. Charlotte Pride is set to celebrate a major milestone this coming weekend, the organization's 25th anniversary. But the roots of Pride events in Charlotte date back to more than 40 years ago. The first Charlotte Pride Day took place in June of 1981 and looked very different from the Pride many have come to know today. Back then, it was in University City and garnered a crowd of about 100. Now, with more than 200,000 weekend attendees, Charlotte Pride is a marquee event and the largest street festival and annual parade in the city. This year, Charlotte Pride is going back to its roots, returning to a park setting. The annual festival will be held August 16th through the 17th in First Ward Park and surrounding streets. This is a change from being held on South Tryon. The new location will offer 33% more space. While there's been excitement around the anniversary and annual event, there have been obstacles along the way. For one, corporate sponsorship is a growing challenge. Some corporate sponsors are pulling back in various ways, from scaling down support to limiting visibility and support. This occurring during a time where various companies and corporations are rolling back DEI initiatives. So this morning, we're going to explore the past, present, and future of Charlotte Pride as it prepares for its 2025 festival and parade this weekend. We'll dive into the meaning of Pride, the challenges persisting in the LGBTQ plus community, and how Charlotte is shaping its own queer history. My guests this morning include Meredith Thompson, Managing Director of Charlotte Pride, Danielle Valdez, Board Director and former Board Chair of Charlotte Pride, Josh Burford, a co-executive director and co-founder of Invisible Histories, a nonprofit focused on the preservation, access, and research of the diverse queer and trans history of the American South. Thank you all so much for joining me this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And a quick disclaimer, WFAE is a media sponsor for Charlotte Pride. If you have any questions about this year's Pride or have memories from past Prides, we'd love to hear them. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. So Josh, you're the historian on the panel. I'm going to start with you. I was told that your first Charlotte Pride experience was in 2013. And in 2015, you were awarded the Harvey Milk Award by Charlotte Pride for your work in archives. And I'm also told that you got to ride a pretty sweet convertible during the parade. So in your opinion, what sets Charlotte Pride apart from other prides you may have attended in the past?
It was a pretty sweet convertible, I'll be honest with you. It was hot, too. Yeah, I mean, Charlotte, I went to my first Charlotte Pride in 2013. I had been living in Charlotte at that point for less than a year and working on the local LGBT archives. And what I found so interesting about it is that I've been to pretty much every size pride that you can imagine, from San Francisco and New York to prides in South Georgia. And it was funny to me how big the pride seemed when I walked up on it, right? Because it's in uptown, the buildings are so tall, it's all there. And yet having been at the pride for, you know, like a little over an hour, I was running into people that I knew. I was seeing organizations that I had, you know, interactions with. And so it still felt to me like a small town feeling pride, but in like a much bigger place. And so I always appreciated that I felt less anonymous, like going to a Charlotte Pride, even having only been a resident in Charlotte for like 11 months at that point. And so it had a really nice feel, like you could tell people were really invested in people connecting, which in some prides I've been to, it was just like a sea of organizations and I wasn't even sure where to go. So I had a good feel, like a local feel to it.
Well, I want to ask you to take us a little further back to a pride that you did not attend. It was in 1981. This was the first time that Charlotte kind of had its first recognized pride events. It took place in the University City area, I believe on UNCC's campus. Mm-hmm. What was that? Can you paint a picture for us of what that first pride was like?
Yeah. And so, you know, 2 years previous, Donaldson King, who had been an organizer in Charlotte in the 1970s, he wrote for the Charlotte Observer. He and a group of five or six people went to march in the 79 New York City Pride, which at the time was sort of the benchmark pride, right? Because they had the oldest one in the country. they marched as a group of like six people with a sign that just said Gay Charlotte on it with very, very little context. And they came home from that Pride Festival really fired up about the fact that this activism that they had been working on, it wasn't necessarily behind the scenes. I mean, Don published his coming out letter in the Charlotte Observer. So, you know, he was pretty vocal. It's just that they had thought, well, what if we moved it into a more public event that allowed people to kind of opt in, right? People who maybe were closeted or just newly out or new to Charlotte and trying to figure it out. And so the idea behind the first Pride, which was a gay Pride day, it was like a field day. There were games and events. They wanted to figure out like what the sweet spot was because they had never planned a Pride before. And so they decided to have it at University City because it's University City might as well have been Raleigh at that point. Like it was so far away from people's imagination. And the UNC Charlotte campus was nothing like it is now. Like the space where that Pride was, I think now is like a track and field arena, but it was just a field, like a literal field. And so it was word of mouth. It wasn't ad hoc. Like they had planned it. Like they knew what they were going to do, but they didn't have a sense of who was going to show up. They didn't have a sense if anybody would drive all the way out to University City to go to a Pride Festival, but they did. And they had a corporate sponsor, like Budweiser sponsored that Pride. Like they brought a big truck and gave people beer and 100-some-odd people. It's hard to know because they didn't keep like records back then. But for a word of mouth Pride Festival in Charlotte, it was a great turnout. So much so that it inspired future Pride events and they wanted it to grow. And so that kickoff year was more than, it was an experiment, but also one that actually worked. Yeah. And so people wanted to come back.
So Meredith, how did we go from a 100-person gathering in University City to over 200,000 attendees at Charlotte Pride in our center city? I know that's a big question, but how do you see that shift from 1981 to 2025?
We have such a vibrant and growing LGBTQ and ally community in Charlotte, and the event is just a reflection of that. Over the last decade, it has really exploded. Going to about a quarter million people visiting the festival and the parade over the course of the weekend. I think, you know, when we moved into Uptown and we became sort of even more visible, I think as Josh just alluded to, like it gave people that opportunity to come out, literally to come out and be part of the event. Maybe it's an older person who's never been to a Pride and is just out, or maybe it's a kid, you know, a young teenager who is sneaking out of the house. It sort of invites, you know, more people to come into that space when it's in the heart of the city. It's accessible, it's free and open to all.
Well, the biggest change this year is the movement to First Ward Park. How was that decision made? Why is that important?
So we actually have been planning this for a while, believe it or not. The first Pride in Uptown was in 2011, and we added the parade in Uptown in 2013. And Josh, you step in and correct me whenever I get my history slightly wrong. It has really grown since then. And we, to meet that demand, decided to move to the park setting because it is more sort of open. We're not blocked in by those buildings. We're not as restricted as we were in Uptown. So now you can sort of stand in the festival and see the whole thing. There are two light rail stations flanking it. We are going to, I think, bring in a new crowd as well. The park is family friendly. So we have an expanded youth and family zone there. A lot of new things, which I'll talk about, I'm sure, later. But I think it's going to be much more festival friendly. It's going to invite folks to come and hang out, enjoy the music, enjoy the entertainment, enjoy the activations. They're not going to be sort of fighting the crowds as we were in our long, narrow festival zone on Tryon in the past. So I think it's going to be a great move. It's going to allow even more folks in.
Yeah. And I read that this change in venue is going to provide 33% more space, too. So I think that speaks to how much it's grown over the years.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Lots of demand for small businesses and vendors to come in. And this is going to help us meet that. So, yes, we're very, very excited for this move.
Well, Daniel, there are a lot of different events at Pride, from art installations, a youth and family zone, as Meredith mentioned, a health fair, a neighborhood market, a drag pageant, and more. I get the sense that, you know, these are obviously entertainment events, but these are also about community. There's something for everyone, and it seems like that was a very conscious decision. Why was that important?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, thank you for having us here today. We're excited to talk to folks about Charlotte Pride, and looking forward for folks to be joining us over the weekend. I think, I've been with the organization for about 10 years now. And what has always been really important is, how do we continue to center the communities that we're trying to reach? And that is through our programming, and that is through the festival that we do every year, but things throughout the year as well. So I think something for folks to really take away about Charlotte Pride is that the festival is one of our programs, but we do programming throughout the year. And that programming, whether that's the film festival, whether that's our internship program or scholarship program, that really allows us to stay connected with community over the course of that year, and to really start creating that trust, and try to create that outreach mechanism that we can use to really think about, what would you like to see at the festival, right? And so we have a very amazing group of dedicated volunteers that help us every year, and different committees that are working on thinking about, how do we engage youth and family members? How do we engage folks from different communities? The LGBTQ, the queer community is present in every community. And so I think what we're trying to showcase is just the breadth and the diversity that our queer community is, because we are part of every community here in Charlotte, whether that's any racial community, social economic, certainly faith and non-faith communities. So I think you get to see a little bit of that. And we've been working really hard over these past 25 years to get bigger and better at it.
How many people are you all expecting this weekend? How can you prepare for that? I mean, do you do surveys ahead of time, or like, there's not an RSVP to Pride, I don't think. So like, how do you tell how many people are going to be coming?
Yeah, no, that is a very important question that we think about every year, because we have to plan for those many folks, right? We have to make sure that we have enough waters and enough vendors and entertainment and all the things that go into planning this big event. So over the years, we've done a couple of things. One is, we've seen a pretty steady growth, but we've seen that we've gotten to a point right now where I think we can probably expect between 250 to 300,000 people. That's been sort of the case over the past few years. Our largest one to date, I think, was right after the pandemic. And then sort of it's been pretty consistent since there. So I think we're expecting a very similar turnout that we've had in the past. I think we also work really closely with our local CRVA that helps us create surveys. Those are done after the fact, though, about how many people attended, what was the economic impact, and sort of some demographics of the kinds of folks that come. And so we use that information as we're thinking about expanding or planning for our festival every year. So we're hoping that we will we'll see as many folks that are able to come to show up. But in terms of what we're planning for right now, I would say about 250,000 folks.
Well, with a big event like this, safety, I'm sure, is top of mind. And we're going to get into that when we come back from our break, what people need to know to feel safe, to be safe during the event, and other impacts to Charlotte Pride, like the economic impacts going on right now. So we will address all of that and more when we come back. I'm Sarah D'Elia in for Mike Collins, and you're listening to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. Their curriculum aims to develop curiosity among middle schoolers and help them foster skills like critical thinking, collaboration, problem solving, and social awareness. More at bischarlotte.org. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Sarah D'Elia in for Mike Collins. Charlotte Pride celebrates its 25th anniversary as an organization this weekend. And this morning, we're taking time to discuss what Pride means to Charlottetians, the history of Pride, and challenges it's faced. My guests this morning include Meredith Thompson, Managing Director of Charlotte Pride, Danielle Valdez, Board Director and former Board Chair of Charlotte Pride, and Josh Burford, Co-Executive Director and Co-Founder of Invisible Histories, a nonprofit focused on the preservation, access, and research of the diverse queer and trans history of the American South. And a quick disclaimer, WFAE is a media sponsor for Charlotte Pride. If you have any questions about this year's Pride or have memories from past Prides, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. So Meredith, before the break, we were talking about safety. We were just about to get into safety. With a big event like this, I'm sure safety is top of mind. How do you all work with CMPD? What kind of presence do they have at Pride?
So we have become the city's largest event in Uptown. So that means that all city departments are deeply involved with us in conversation each year to evaluate the changing needs with safety and with folks' comfort level. We work with the full Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, medic and fire, and we have ongoing discussions over really a year. In-person meetings and conversations aside, they're monitoring chatter and are very closely aligned with us and in discussion with us so that we can keep evaluating how things are evolving. Are there changing needs? Are there things that have popped up? And honestly, every year it does look different. And certainly with this new festival zone, there's been a lot more discussion about that. We do know there have been a few major Charlotte events that have taken place over there, and they have gone seamlessly. So for the most part, so we know that it's going to be a great event and that we have the full support of the city. We're always flattered. They tell us that we are the most organized event that they work with, the most organized. So we appreciate that a lot, and we are fortunate to have a good working relationship with the city.
And I also wanted to ask about the current policy of allowing police officers to participate or not in the parade. I know that there was some back and forth over that in 2020 in the wake of civil unrest that was going on in Charlotte and across the country in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. What is the current Charlotte Pride policy regarding officers being allowed to march?
So we do welcome officers or folks from any city departments to join us as part of an ERG. So not in uniform, but in plain clothes and as part of a larger city department. So that's our current policy. As we're going to discuss history today, we know that Pride began as a protest, and that's, a complicated relationship that we have, and that certainly certain populations of folks do feel over-policed, and so we want everyone to feel welcome and comfortable, but we also want to invite officers and folks from city departments to join us, just not in uniform.
Well, another group that typically has a presence at Pride festivities, wherever you are, Charlotte or otherwise, are protesters. There's a section on Charlotte Pride's website dedicated to answering questions around safety. And under a tab labeled protesters, it reads, "Do not engage with protesters." Right. Why that advice?
It's because that is what they're seeking. They want to ruin our day. They want to take away our joy. They want to distract. They want pictures taken, and if we simply ignore them, it helps de-escalate. That's what we want. We don't want to escalate the situation. We don't want to get into an argument with them over religion or something. We want to just have a good time. And it has always worked every year to have that approach and to just go about our business. We don't need to even just mock them or, fight with them or be silly about it. Just walk right by them. and focus on the fun you want to have, focus on the entertainment, focus on the resources that you want to connect with and the people you want to connect with. Focus on the happy, joyful, vibrant community that's there to celebrate. Don't pay attention to the protesters.
I have a few fast facts for our listeners about Charlotte Pride. So Charlotte Pride as an organization was founded in 2000 and held its first festival in 2001. Charlotte Pride held its first parade in 2013. In 2017, Charlotte Pride Parade became the city's largest annual parade by the number of entrants and marchers. $15.8 million in total economic impact annually is expected from Charlotte Pride, and an estimated 30,000 out-of-town visitors are expected to visit. There's a clear economic impact here to the city of Charlotte, but it's complicated in today's political climate. Nonprofits throughout Mecklenburg County have had funds cut, but the Mecklenburg County fiscal year's budget in 2026 allocated $125,000 in economic development dollars for Charlotte Pride. But not everyone agreed with that. County Commissioner Laura Meyer said that funding should be used for other county needs.
I just don't think Charlotte Pride, and I'm not going to make any friends by saying this, I just don't think it's a time to spend money on a parade. And I'm not going to make any friends. I'm not going to apologize, but I don't think that is in the best interest of the whole county.
So Meredith, I know you've heard this cut. This is not the first time that you've heard this cut. What is your response to that?
So I have had some great conversation with Laura Meyer. We have emailed and we have spoken, and she is an advocate for us. She's in our corner. It's just, I think that the county was facing a major deficit and they had some difficult decisions to make. I know there were some other nonprofits and some other services that got cut, and it is really tough right now. So I think, you know, I just had to reframe the thinking and, you know, in terms of what you were just talking about, right? The economic impact. This isn't just like a parade. It's more than that on so many levels. It's not just a festival. But yeah, you know what? Our city needs those things anyway. But it's really just an opportunity for folks to see what a vibrant, wonderful county we live in and what we have to offer, and that we embrace folks and welcome diversity, and that we love the arts, right? And that we do have like a wonderful return on investment, like more than $500,000 in Mecklenburg County taxes. So it's easy. So I think once we have those conversations, I know, you know, Laura and others on the board of commissioners were definitely on our side. Look, they just issued a Pride proclamation. I think it was last week, you know, for Charlotte Pride and Charlotte Black Pride. And so I consider them allies, and I consider them to be definitely on our side. I just think it's a complicated conversation sometimes.
Well, Josh, you mentioned in our first segment about Budweiser being a sponsor for that first kind of field day in 1981 in Charlotte. How important has corporate sponsorship been historically? What does it mean to kind of stand up as a corporation and say that you are going to support an event like Pride?
I mean, in the early years of organizing, especially if you think about, you know, New York has its first Pride in 1970, the Christopher Street Liberation Day Parade, and there was no thought of sponsorship outside of the community. It isn't really until Harvey Milk starts to work to becoming a board supervisor in San Francisco in the 70s that he was working with unions who were working with corporations, bringing together groups of people who were advocating for different things, right? So workplace protections, for stabilizing rent, those kinds of things. And so he builds partnerships with unions that then turn into corporate sponsors, because it was partnerships, right? It was less like an advertising moment and more like, we're working with this organization because we support them, they support us. Mm. And so those are like literally direct one-for-one partnerships. And so that visibility was interesting because in a lot of cases when, you know, Budweiser sponsored a lot of prides in the 70s and 80s, but partially because they didn't have an imagination, to Meredith's point, about like what the queer community was doing, right? There was all this like secrecy in gay bars. There was secrecy in the community for, you know, valid reasons. But once they made the case that, you know, our community is also, to Daniel's point, like purchasing these things. We are Black, white, and brown people. We are immigrants. We are native locals. We're all these things. Corporations began to see an investment in the time of a community that would be purchasing a product, right? But the relationship between corporate sponsorship has has waxed and waned over the years, and not just in political environments either, but in the 90s, it was so hard to get any kind of corporate sponsorship because our prides were so political. Mm. And they're political for us, right? This wasn't an external push for politicking. Like in the 90s in Charlotte, they were advocating for an anti-discrimination statement in the city. So the prides reflected that spirit of political organizing. And so it's always been an uneasy relationship between a group of people who are advocating for themselves constantly because they have to, because every act of being a queer and trans person is in itself a political act in a society that does not recognize our full humanity. And so you can't just be a human in the world when you're queer and trans, right? So it comes and goes depending on the political moments, our own needs in the community, and the ways in which corporations see themselves as a part of who we are and what we do. And so it's never going to be a good fit for everybody. It just kind of, you just do what you do what you do to make things happen, which I think is really the theme that underlines so much of the Pride history in Charlotte, is groups doing what they needed to do to make something important happen. Mm-hmm. So,
Daniel, I saw you nodding your head along as Josh was talking. Can you tell me a little bit from Charlotte Pride's perspective? When have there been moments of corporate sponsorship decline or some pushback or some, quite frankly, like just being scared to participate in some way? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I've been serving on the board of the organization for about 10 years now. And when I first started, it was all volunteer led, meaning that all of the people working to put together this big event, and not just the festival and parade weekend, but all of the programmings that we did throughout the year, were all by volunteers, people who had their own jobs and who were taking time outside of those hours to work on this. And so one of my biggest priority as a board chair was to really bring in additional like full-time paid staff that could actually do this work and take the organization to the next level and to really provide the kind of quality programming and events that this community deserves. And so part of that equation is thinking about fundraising. How do we think about getting the resources that we need in order to pay for the staff that we have and for all of the tents and the security and everything that goes into putting on this festival? And so I would want to also just highlight for folks that a huge percentage of our costs, our operating costs, actually go to things that we have to pay for in order for us to have this event. So whether that's security, whether that is tents, generators, permits, all of the things that you need in order to actually have this festival happen, I would say takes up about 60 to 65% of our budget. And then the rest is really to pay for all the other things that are associated with this event. And so thinking about the fundraising aspect, it's really important because it is a free event to the community. And I think that that is something that we want to continue to do. And so we rely on corporations through sponsorships. We rely certainly on other foundations through grant making. And we've been really lucky now to, for the first time, bring in municipal government in the way that we have through Mecklenburg County. And I hope that we can see more of that coming from other public institutions and organizations here locally, because Charlotte Pride is not the only one that does this. This is a very common thing for municipalities and municipal governments to engage with organizations that are providing these kinds of services and also creating these kinds of opportunities and celebration for their local communities. That's bringing in dollars, that's bringing in, folks who can really, if they're new to a community and they're wanting to engage, Charlotte Pride, as well as many other festivals that happen throughout the city, provide that. But there have been lots of instances throughout my 10 years where we've had to really work with our corporate sponsors and making sure that that we're sort of on the same page in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here and what we're trying to do. And so and that meant having some conversations with some of those corporate partners throughout the years, whether that's on issues around, for example, Black Lives Matter, or what we've seen right now with this pushback on DEI. And it's been a spectrum of engagement with these corporate partners. Some of them are pulling back. Some of them are wanting to be more behind the scenes and not be as visible. And others are doubling down. Mm-hmm. And I that we've developed these partnerships and these relationships with these partners, not just corporate partners, right? All kinds of different partners that are instrumental in helping us do what we do every year. And we understand that we are in some really challenging times right now. And I think that we've built enough of a relationship and a level of trust to push through this. And we're hopeful that we're going to come out on the other side much stronger, both as a community and as an organization.
I want to talk about something called rainbow capitalism that I feel like not everyone is familiar with. It's a term that I would like to ask Josh, if you don't mind, if you have a definition off the top of your head, if you don't mind sharing that with our listeners.
Yeah, rainbow capitalism is this notion that businesses, corporations lean into support for the queer community during times of heightened awareness. So June for Pride Month, October for LGBT History Month, because they are cashing in on an opportunity to elevate their brand within a community and sort of, you know, I'll use the word siphon, funding from those communities into their businesses. And it's called rainbow capitalism because it seems as if corporations are very queer friendly in June. Right. But then July 1st rolls around and the logos go back to normal. And so it's this notion that capitalism in and of itself is, it sees any opportunity it can to further its own ends. And queer people, because we're more organized now, seem to be another one of those ends. And so we've become, you know, corporate people in June sometimes.
And Meredith, how do you navigate that? As you know, one of the leaders of Charlotte Pride, how do you navigate rainbow capitalism? Can you use it in ways that can be beneficial to Charlotte Pride, or is it just really frustrating?
So, absolutely, we can use it. You know, it right now it's interesting because Daniel is talking about some of the sponsors, you know, not wanting to be as visible. And typically in the past, what we're selling to them and what we're bringing for ourselves, it's visibility. So it's really weird and interesting when folks are saying, okay, we're going to contribute at the same level, but I don't want you to put our logo on anything because, you know, the higher ups are worried that, you know, a photograph could be taken out of place, or there's going to just be some sort of online controversy that we have to mitigate. And that's going to just be a distraction. And, you know, at the end of the day, these entities are businesses, they're corporations, and the bottom line is, you know, money. And it's, you know, that's understandable on a lot of levels. You know, we have some sponsors that are really more deeply committed, and then we have, you know, on a deeper level other than just a contribution, that want to be engaged with us year round, that, you know, come to our job fair. Yeah, it's a complicated, nuanced conversation for sure.
We're going to leave it there and we'll take a quick break. We'll keep the conversation going. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, I'm Sarah D'Elia. We're discussing the history behind Charlotte Pride today and what it means to Charlottetians. The festival and parade will take place August 16th through the 17th in First Ward Park and surrounding streets in Uptown. The Charlotte Pride Parade route will run along Tryon Street in Uptown. My guests this morning include Meredith Thompson, Managing Director at Charlotte Pride, Daniel Valdez, Board Director and former Board Chair of Charlotte Pride, and Josh Burford, a co-director and co-founder of Invisible Histories, a nonprofit focused on the preservation, access, and research of the diverse queer and trans history of the American South. And if you have any questions about Pride this year or have memories from past Prides that you'd like to share, please do email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We did get a message from Tamara Sheffield, the mayor of Salisbury and past Harvey Milk Award recipient, sending her congratulations to Charlotte Pride. She says, congratulations on another Pride Festival and on your move to First Ward Park. I wish you success and a safe weekend. Josh, I want to turn to you. We are talking about the economic impact and sort of this up and down relationship with corporate sponsorships and some of the scarcity around wanting to put your brand name out there on Charlotte Pride, depending on the temperature of the political climate. As a historian, how do you think this point in history with prides in general, Charlotte and otherwise, are going to be looked back on?
I mean, there's never, there hasn't been a moment in our history in the last 20 years that the Pride of Charlotte has been the way that it is more important for people to show up for a Pride festival than right now. Like, the community is unequivocally under direct attack in every possible aspect of our lives, most especially, let me elevate the struggles that our trans community goes through every single day, just trying to exist as human beings. And so this year of our pride celebrations all over the country really do harken back, I think, to our beginning prides in New York, the early prides in Atlanta, in San Francisco, where we were fighting as a community for ourselves, for, I mean, honestly, like, basic human dignity. And so the prides that we're having right now, they're not just, to Meredith's point, like, we're not just talking about a parade. Like, we're talking about, if you're going to show up, you need to show up this year. Like, go to the Pride festivals in Charlotte. Go to Salisbury Pride, by the way, one of my favorite prides. So shout out to their mayor. Yeah. Go to small town Pride festivals. You need to show up, because there is an absolute direct effort to render us silent and invisible. And we have to show up to prove that that is not possible. As a group of people, you cannot silence us. And so I can't think of a time when it's been more important for us to show up as a full community of people and really show our, not just our numbers, but like our strength, our joy, our anger, all the things that we're experiencing now, just trying to live in a society that somehow doesn't want us to be people in a society.
Meredith, during a time where there is a lot of pushback on DEI initiatives or a lot of rollback, mm-hmm. big companies aren't allowed to show their support. Where does Charlotte Pride go from here as far as finances? I mean, are you turning to the public more for those kind of donations? Or, I mean, if you can't rely on big companies, who can you rely on?
Yeah, that's a great question. So We definitely always want to keep our festival and parade free. But one of the things we're looking at is, are there ticketed opportunities in the future that we can create to sort of bring people in who want, individual donors who want to help, who want to give, who want to do more? Because I have seen a response, to what's going on, right? And to perhaps when something's in the media, talking about what we're talking about right now, corporate retreat from Pride, you know, I've seen at one point like a 78% increase in individual giving. Now, that's not going to meet the gap still that that corporate America provides. It's only with corporate America, I think, that we're able to do this large scale free festival. As we've talked about earlier, we've got some municipal support right now, which is important and which we think we should have, because we are our city's largest event in Uptown and we have such a huge economic impact. We're looking at grant making, what kinds of sources can we go to? You know, Arts and Science Council is a big supporter of us. Within recent years. So we're looking at diversifying our funding sources, which I think any nonprofit needs to do now. And, it's always a good practice to look at, because we don't want to ever have our programming affected in any kind of way by our corporate partners.
So. Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is have there been any cuts as of now to things that you're able to provide to the public?
No. And one thing I do, when Josh was talking, I want to call out, you mentioned small town prides. There have been so many new small town prides that have popped up, and I find that really encouraging. So I do think we see individuals supporting pride in a big way right now, right? So I want to call that out. And I'm sorry, what was your question again? Sorry.
If there have been any services or any programs, anything that have had to be cut because of these corporate rollbacks.
Okay. So no. You're going to give me an opportunity to talk a while about all the exciting activations we have going on. So no, we're bringing in more vendors. I'm really excited. We're Charlotte Pride, right? So we're going to really have a focus on Charlotte. We're going to have local vendors, artists, entrepreneurs. We're going to have 40 of them on the park. We have more than tripled the size of our neighborhood market. It used to be tables under a tent, right? So we are so excited about that, because Again, speaking to the relationship between Pride and our corporate partners, we've always had to center our sponsors, and we've had such limited space in Uptown, and we want our sponsors there. It's really important on a lot of levels to the employees who work there, to all of us, to see that support from these brands and from these corporations. It's powerful, but we want to have local artists, right? So we're focusing on local entertainment. We're going to have such a wonderful diversity of talent. We recently had our community auditions, and the talent was unbelievable. We're really excited about the queer local entertainers we're going to be able to uplift and put on this giant stage, our main stage. We're really excited about Flourish. Daniel was talking about our amazing volunteers earlier. We have a music teacher who has curated Flourish for a number of years, and it is amazing. I mean, I am a festival organizer, so I love a good festival, but if you can escape the heat and the crowd for a minute and go into Flourish, I feel like it is the festival's best kept secret. It's only on Saturday from 1 to 6. It's going to be in the Dubois Center. Guess what? Air conditioned. There is going to be choral music, visual art, spoken word. It is gorgeous. It's like going to church. So please go to Flourish and enjoy that. And because of our awesome volunteers and because of the community that uplifts us and helps us fill the gap, we're not sacrificing anything. I think it's going to be even better. It's going to have even more of a Charlotte local feel. And I'm really excited about that.
Okay. Well, I think I know what you are most looking forward to, Meredith, with your shout out to Flourish. That sounds like a great event. Daniel, what are you most looking forward to for this Pride this year?
Oh my goodness. There's so many things that I look forward to every year, but I really do, as someone who's volunteered for this organization, I think what I always take away from Charlotte Pride is walking around the festival throughout the day. We work really long hours, and just seeing people of all walks of lives, of any kind of sort of community, being there, enjoying themselves, being who they want to be. And sometimes it's the only time during the year that they can do this, whether because, you know, their family doesn't accept them and this is a time where they can come and be who they are. Whether it's, you know, someone that's older, that this is their first Pride ever, someone who, parents who their kids have just come out to them and they want to support them and they want to come and enjoy Charlotte Pride with them, or they want to find resources where they can maybe go to a new, find a new house of faith that accepts them and their kids, or find an organization where they can connect with other parents like PFLAG, or for a youth to connect with other youth like Time Out Youth, or to seek services. So those are all the kinds of things that I really, you know, I really look forward to, is just seeing the connections and seeing people enjoy the day and bring all of themselves to the festival, and that we as a collective, this amazing folks of our staff and our volunteers coming together to put on this huge, massive event. That takes a lot to put on, and that we are cobbling together all of the resources that we can to make sure that this continues to grow and that it is a quality program and event for our community.
Well, Josh, you are joining us from Alabama today, but you have Charlotte ties, as we've mentioned. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit more about your organization, Invisible Histories. It's going to be moving in part to Charlotte. So first, let's start there. What is the goal of the organization and the work that you all do?
So we're a community-based archive and history project. Our goal is the location and preservation of LGBTQ Southern history. Our secondary goal is getting this history out of the archives and into the community. And so we do this through public programming, exhibiting, working with universities. We've got university partnerships all over the world now. We just added 2 in Canada, 2 in the UK, working with partners in India now. And so our goal is really to find this history that exists and then give it back to the queer and trans community in as many ways as possible. So it's a lot of work with orgs, but it's also a lot of work with individual people, and the collections are growing. We were collecting just in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, and Florida, and then we expanded into the Carolinas this past year. And so we're all over the place. We also run a network called Queer History South, which is in 13 southern states, and it's a collection of right around 1,000 people who are working in some aspect of queer history, oral history archiving and community organizing. And as you mentioned, we are, you know, our home office has been in Birmingham for the last 7 years. And we are now moving the collections and our staff to Charlotte next year, next spring, to be in our own space and to have a working physical standalone archive and history center.
Why Charlotte?
It was a long decision-making process. What we need, especially now in this political climate, we needed a city that had a large enough queer population that was invested in local organizing and philanthropy. So that was number one. Number two, we needed to be somewhere in the South that we could get to the rest of the South pretty easily. And then number three, we needed to be in a place that would offer us at least the opportunity to flourish and to grow in a political climate that we weren't constantly having to fight for every single inch of ground. And so we looked at Atlanta, we looked at Nashville, and we looked at Charlotte. And after visiting with city leaders and organizational leaders, the decision was that we would do the best in Charlotte. And so it was about a 2-year process to kind of see what we could actually do. And I mean, I'm excited to come back to Charlotte. You know, I lived there 7 years. I was wonderful to work with everybody there, but we really do think that we could create an opportunity to have something that exists in very few places anywhere in the country, which is a standalone center for the study of Southern queer and trans history and culture that will be open to the public, that people can come in and use our resources, that we can work with partners like Charlotte Pride for events and to really elevate this incredible history, especially in places where people don't know it, like rural Mississippi, which has some of the most amazing queer history that I've ever worked on in my career for the last 20 years.
How do you think understanding this history shapes how Charlotte Pride approaches its work today?
I mean, you can't imagine a future if you don't know where you've come from. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing right now, this move for anti-DEI, this movement to defund the humanities and the arts, that is not an arbitrary decision. It is an old school fascist decision-making process that understands if you take away people's history, then what you do is you force them to the margins and then you disconnect them from the reality of what their community has done. This is a decision that has been made for centuries to undermine groups of people that have less political clout in places. I mean, there are so many fewer trans representatives in politics anywhere, not just the American South, but all over the country. And so for us to be able to imagine ourselves 100 years from now, we need to know where we've been. And it is powerful to preserve history and to give it back to people and then let them learn, I mean, all from our mistakes as well as our successes on how we want to imagine what the future looks like for ourselves. And I think that fits in perfectly with what Pride festivals are doing, to give us that excuse for joy in a world that is so difficult right now to exist. I don't know about y'all, but I'm tired. and it is, August of this year, and I'm exhausted. And so we need these moments together where we can really celebrate and get excited about what we've done, because there's so much to be proud of in the queer community. We've done so much, especially in the South. Like, our queer organizing is so good. And so many people now are learning from us, because all of a sudden they were surprised when their coastal enclaves were suddenly under attack. We were just recently in New York last year. My colleague Megan said to the people in the audience, welcome to our world. Mm. Welcome to what it's like to live where we live. Learn from us.
Well, Pride has been celebrating, Pride is going to be celebrating their 25-year milestone in Charlotte this weekend, but Pride has always been about honoring both progress and struggle. We have just a moment and a half left of the program today, and I want to give each of you an opportunity to answer this question. Meredith, I'm going to start with you. What gives you hope right now as we go into this weekend of Pride?
I think it's the joy that we're going to see and the resilience and just the pure enjoyment of life and the contributions that all of us bring as LGBTQ people. And I think it's those small town prides we just talked about and those individual givers who prop us up. That's what gives me hope.
Daniel.
Oh, my goodness. I think what really gives me hope is is young folks today. I think that there is there's so much energy in really thinking about what they can do, and I think that I'm excited to bring in new volunteers, new leaders into this work. So if you're listening out there and you haven't been involved in anything, this is the time. This is the time to do it. We need you, and there's lots of different ways to push back and to help us move through this moment. You don't have to do all of it. And so come join us. Come learn about what you can do.
And Josh, I'm going to give you the last word. What are you hopeful for entering into this Pride weekend?
I'm very hopeful for what is happening behind the scenes, what young organizers are doing all over the American South, and not just organizing in cities, but queer farming communities in the Deep South, union organizers in Atlanta, all of this work that is continuing on this tradition. And I'm so hopeful and excited that we are fighting together for this future that we want to be in.
I want to thank my guests for joining me this morning. That is out all the time that we have. Thank you so much. Happy Pride. I'm Sarah D'Elia filling in for Mike Collins, and this has been Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.